SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A good Friday morning, race fans. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Twin Spires weekend preview, and we've got plenty to look forward to and plenty of previewing and plus some reviewing last night in particular with Turfway. I'll get to that in just a minute or two. First order of business, and for those that follow along on Twitter and Blue Sky, I just sent out the very sad news that came this morning. Woodbury Payne letting me know that Rodney Jenkins, at the age of 80, who's been ailing with Alzheimer's and its assorted infirmities. Rodney Jenkins passed last night, and for a certain percentage of the audience, a large percentage, you immediately just think of Rodney Jenkins as a Mid-Atlantic trainer, one of those good, solid, professional trainers that, you look at at his horses, and when you're handicapped, and you have to respect, and obviously some of the best ones that come to mind most recently, Cordmaker, certainly, but going back a few years, Bandbox, who was the first big Tappet. New York, happened to be a New York bred. In fact, our friend Aaron Yagoda was the co-breeder of Bandbox. And Rodney, Rodney had protracted success as a thoroughbred trainer. But for those of us that, only know about the equestrian exploits, of trainers that we discuss and that we feature and so forth, are probably going to be just astounded when they read later today and in coming days about Rodney Jenkins' life and career before the racetrack. Because in equestrian life, equestrian circles, among the horsey set, Rodney Jenkins, widely considered the greatest natural horseman America has ever produced. It's going to be tough today, but you haven't heard Rodney with us in a number of years, but you certainly have heard his lifelong best friend, Woody Payne. They grew up basically miles from each other in Virginia, and we'll get Woodbury to talk about Rodney. I mean, they literally grew up together, and no sooner did I put up the tribute to Rodney the first person to respond was John Sadler, who himself came to the racetrack through the show ring. And Rodney Jenkins, you're not going to believe what you're going to read. For those of you that strictly know of him, via the horses that he would run at Pimlico and Colonial and when you come to New York. Van Box was a New York brand. There'll be an outpouring of tribute because he dominated. And when I say dominated, won everything. I mean, just won every possible, you know, show jumping event, and it's the accomplishments are I mean, almost they're almost too expansive to believe. And most famously, a thoroughbred, and there's a very instructive aspect to Rodney and thoroughbreds in the show ring, because the horse that he's most famously cited and acknowledged was Idle Dice, who was a complete washout on the racetrack. Never won on the race. It was an Oklahoma bred. In fact, when I go to Remington next week, there's tons of Oklahoma bred pictures and such. I'm going to have to see if Idle Dice was is appropriately honored, but a horse that it was probably too smart even to be a racehorse, because he was just not that, he wasn't that interested in the racetrack competition. But and in fact, they say he liked to, you know, look around and look up in the stands, and he's one of those horses. But when set down and instructed, it was just as natural apparently as Rodney was in the irons. So look up Idle Dice and Rodney Jenkins. There's all kinds of things that'll intrigue and enthrall. So deep sympathies. The Eveline is assistant that's been running the barn. I mean, the last horse under Rodney's name, but he had been away from the track the last couple of years, and one of those people that kind of quietly went about being a legend. So thoughts to everybody, the wide array of friends and associates and admirers, Rodney Jenkins. And I'm sure Callie's going to be on in a little bit this hour to talk about the two juvenile championship races. And I spent all this time, 5 minutes, whatever, 7 minutes, and I didn't mention Ellen Charles. Mrs. Charles, of course, Hillwood, who Rodney, handled her horses for years. And so thoughts to Mrs. Charles, too. This has got to, hit her, I'm sure, hard as well. And all the people around Maryland that, worked for Rodney, I'm sure, what they learned and, took away from association with him. Callie will be on, and certainly, she came to Maryland, and Rodney, she's got some appreciation as well. I want, Alan Foreman, I told you yesterday, we're expecting Alan, and I let Alan know earlier this morning after Woodbury let me know. And as I told you, Alan was under the weather, and he's a little better, but he's now he's not sure he is going to even make it to Arizona. So we'll hope for the best, because there's a lot to do with Alan, and I was also going to have him talk about Rodney. So I'm sure we'll be able to talk to Alan, but those kinds of conversations, the situation with the Maryland Jockey Club and the handing over of the properties of the entity to the Maryland Horsemen, as well as some of the things that are you know, some of these decisions with the training center and with the racetrack and the rebuild of Pimlico. So we have all that. And we've got, of course, more HISA. And the HISA news actually even was added on beyond the Paco Lopez circumstance. And there is some follow-up to that because Paco quite apologetic and contrite in a statement. And to his credit, he is acknowledging just how awful his behavior was. And he basically is saying he will accept any penalty and he'll do whatever he can to, win over hearts and minds. That's a big ask, considering his resume. So he's stepping away. Not that he has a choice, because the provisional suspension is indefinite. There is no set parameter to what HISA levied on Wednesday. So there's that topic. And then yesterday emerging is the circumstance around Churchill Downs and the New York Racing Association suing over the assessments that the FTC and HISA are suggesting. So we've got lots to talk about in Arizona, as if we didn't have a lot anyway. Now there's more. So anyway, I hope Alan can make it, because it's better. These kinds of conversations are better in person. A few things to lay out here before we start in. Nick Tamaro will join us first. We'll have at least one aqueduct set of opinions each hour. Nick Tamaro first. We'll talk about this terrific Cigar Mile card tomorrow. And then Dave Grenning in hour two, and David Aragona in hour three. And speaking of Aqueduct today, opening day at Oaklawn, and we'll try to fold in some more Oaklawn as well. But today, for opening day, there's a cross-country pick five that is going to utilize races 5, 6, 7. Let me make sure of this. 5, 6, 7 at Oaklawn and the late double in New York. Race 7 and 8 at Aqueduct, races 5, 6, 7 at Oaklawn. I printed them out and I'll try to get to them. So lots of Aqueduct today. I told you about Maryland. We'll talk about the Maryland Juvenile Championships, the two races for boys and girls. Scully, of course, mid-show. We'll check in with Barry Spears. You've got the start of the Tampa Road to three-year-old action with the inaugural and the Sandpiper. Those both look good. See what Barry wants to do in those. We'll check in with Hammer, hour three, start of hour three. David Aragona has mentioned, and I tried to leave a little bit of room for maybe a little Oaklawn handicapping late. Steve Anderson is also under the weather because I wanted to get Steve in to talk about the Starlet. Starlet's okay. It's not a bad bunch at all. Seven of them going after the grade two. Baffert, of course, well represented with a trio. However, he doesn't have the favorite. The favorite's Phil D'Amato with Vodka with a Twist coming out of that good effort in the Breeders' Cup. Baffert sends Mawu as well as Tenma and Nooney. Tim Yak team, Practical Dream for the Amistoys. And who else? Michael W., MWM. McCarthy's got Look Forward. And Peter Ertens got Atmo, who's 4-1. The Starlet's good. That's one of my favorite races. It pains me to have to miss it, and not getting to Los Al this trip, the way this crazy calendar fell. So, but Steve Anderson, he's KO'd as well today. All right, a quick look at last night, night two at Turfway, and that $156,000 pick five carryover. And sure enough, I what I tell Caitlin, 3.5 times for the pot. I was only off by 100%. It almost $1 million. Nothing like a pick five carryover. $914,000 bet into that pick five. So the pool was over $1 million. And it was, I'll tell you what, it paid $14,000. And three very clear horses that, you know, probably was on everybody's ticket or at least on their radar. And that it started with Jitterbug, who at 3-1 was a nice price. Everybody went all in on Farfalle, who, you know, was basically loping along well enough, chasing the long shot leader, but then had no answer late in the game and was passed by four horses, ended up fifth. So Jitterbug gets up under Alex Achard and gets past Lorraine, who at 32-1 would have set this thing on its ear. But Jitterbug gets everybody into the second leg. Then you had at 1-2 Ravelli, who actually had won earlier in the evening. I think he won the third or the fourth, but he won with Richie's Got Game and did not get claimed. The nickel claimer wins off by 7, and nobody saw fit to take Richie's Got Game with them. He's certainly is worth a nickel, say the least. So everybody, I assume everybody's alive. And then came a horse that was this was a wince-inducing beat. Silent Sonata, and from a thoroughgraph standpoint, this horse was very interesting and was very possible. And I was a little nauseous. As it happens, I wasn't going to hit this anyway because of the nightcap. But Silent Sonata, 26-1, was out in the 11 hole, and that was a little off-putting, just a little much. I mean, I thought PH Factor, who was already in the 9, I thought I was stretching things, and PH Factor took a ton of money. So anyway, Silent Sonata with Sanger gets past Soul Coaxing, who there'd be a lot more winners if Soul Coaxing had won at 5-1. So Silent Sonata, the first horse that makes this thing, you know, sends this off on its ear. And then Opera Monday, good job, very nice job by Caitlin, who wanted to single Richie's Got Game and said she was going to lean heavily on Opera Monday, and Opera Monday came running from well back. This is Brendan Walsh, and at 5-2 as the near second choice, Victorious went favored, and I didn't really get that. That was the Maury horse, but anyway, Opera Monday, 682. So that gets us to the nightcap, and there was a nice variety of will pays, and another horse, second night in a row that a horse came off the AE list and wins. Old Fashioned Girl for Paul McEntee and Resolute Racing Alliance. Almost 13-1. And actually, there was the top three finishers were separated by like a length at the end. Safecracker Sue was 32-1. I didn't even notice the will pay for for Safe Cracker Sue. Anyway, Old Fashioned Girl, 13-1, and your pick five, $13,828. And that's a good pay. I mean, three very logical, one tough to find, and one very tough to find horse in day two or night two of Turfway. And again, Indiana kind of flexing. I think there were another three last out Indiana winners. That Old Fashioned Girl came from Presque Isle for McEntee. Opera Mundi was at Keeneland. You had the Richie's Got Game, as Caitlin mentioned, had already made a start at the beginning of the fairgrounds meet. So we continue to see Churchill. Jitterbug was coming from Churchill. So it's a wide variety. Joe Sharp with a winner. Banks, maiden breaker, two-year-old. And this is another Bo Lane. Our man Bo, an outwork gelding. Owner Tom Lambro, out of Bo's nice Blip Says Bye. And oh, there's the Ravelli. What do you think, Mark, won the fourth last seen at Hawthorne? So it's going to be fun. Turfway is going to be challenging and interesting, I would think, all season. Let's get Nick Tamaro. Let's get Nick. Here we go. Let me get started, all right? And I'm very anxious to. This should be very entertaining. I want to see what nuances. If you were listening to the replay, you heard Jeff Franklin, and we'll get Nick's take and Grenning's, and I suppose Scully's going to look as well. But in addition, we'll also hear from David Aragona in hour three, and I think we've got Nick Tamaro. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. This is a very good card tomorrow in New York.
It is, yeah. I think the Cigar Mile is the centerpiece, obviously. I don't think it's a vintage renewal of the Remsen, but, you know, who'd have thought that the Remsen would be as productive as it was last year? Oh, wait. Those of us that actually pay attention to the Remsen thought that, instead of the people who just scoff at it year in and year out and haven't realized yet the Remsen's been a good race for a long, long time. But all kidding aside, no, it should be a lot of fun. I'll tell you, it's the craziest thing, Steve. It's like the biggest shot in the arm the Cigar Mile could have gotten was a downgrade. Yeah. Right? The two runnings since the downgrade have been among the best runnings we've ever seen of it, and it makes no sense whatsoever, but it should definitely get back to grade one status very soon if we continue to see these kind of additions of it. And obviously, you know, the likes of Bookham Dano and Senor Buscador being in there help. Mulligan, another grade one winner already in there. So, yeah, it looks like a fun card. In a way, it's kind of the end of the best racing we see in New York year in and year out. But certainly there'll be some fun wintertime chances moving forward.
Well, we can do this in order. We can work backwards. In terms of the stakes action, it starts actually in the fourth with the Gopher Wand. I ended up actually printing up race three and I went from there because there is an additional pick five that is shoved in here between races three and seven. That starts with a maiden special, two-year-olds going a mile, and ends with the Remsen. Let's do that. Let's go three through.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm not exactly sure why the Gopher Wand was detached from the rest of the stakes races, because it's not as if there's some prohibitive favor you wanted to keep out of a pick six or something like that. But yeah, it was a little strange. But that third's a good maiden special weight race. Look, this card has yielded a lot of very good maiden special weight winners over the years, and we've seen those horses go on to do big things. I know Andy has a tweet series about it and has kept track of it, probably more so than he's kept track of anything, and he'll add to it hopefully if we see a good one on this program. But Treaty of Rome for Chad looks like the horse to beat. Second-time starter who ran into rookie card on debut. Rookie card, obviously, is a pretty talented Danny Garden trainee. And Outlaw, who was second, is a well-bred John Mott runner for Mott. And just, you know, looked like a Chad horse that probably needed a race. Definitely the case more often than not with Chad's horses. He can have one ready on debut, but no surprise that this one might end up needing a little bit of time. I thought A Bourbon for Toby ran well first out and should probably improve with experience as well. Most of Tom Morley's horses do. Tom's had a bit of a rough fall, but that can certainly change in an instant and could change with a good horse like this, who was clearly training well for his debut, performed well, bred to be better going long, gets a little extra ground, no surprise there. And the aptly named Take Home the Cup, first-time starter for Rick Dutrow, owned by Vinnie Viola's St. Elias stable, a homebred. Of course, Vinnie owns the Florida Panthers, who took home the cup last year. And throw out Rick Dutrow right now at your own risk, right? 55% at the meet.
Crazy.
And just continues to, yeah, his horses are not running quite as well lately. There has definitely been kind of a downward trend in some of their buyer speed figures. So I do think the big run, which, I mean, of course, eventually will end. It's probably coming towards its end now. First-time starters are often, they're often breakers of trends one way or the other. Sometimes when your barn's cold, it could be a firster that gets you turned around. And sometimes when your barn's hot, it could be a firster that just underperforms. And maybe that's, you know, that's where things sort of shift. There's a first-time starter on the outside for Klarovich, for Chad. There's not much pedigree with that horse, just three minor winners on the dam side. The dam herself won her debut and really didn't do much beyond that. So that feels like a horse, given what they paid, that might be more of a long-term type project. So it looks like a relatively chalky start. I think Treaty of Rome is likely to win.
All right. Clearly looks like a good group. And you mentioned, you know, we mentioned that rookie card race, that rookie card and the Tip Top Thomas, you know, those, that whole group of races. And of course, you know, there is an interesting, you mentioned the Morley, should Bourbon for Toby run well? I don't know how much it enhances Tux's chance, in the Remsen, but, you know, he's already 3-1, but just be aware that, Bourbon for Toby, which I'm, you know, Titletown Racing, I'm going to guess that this is a tribute to Toby Sheets, but, I'm just guessing on that.
Is this Paul Horning's ownership?
Well,
is that right?
At one time, right? Titletown that horse that he had with Lucas a few years ago.
Right. Right. Relatively good horse.
Yes.
I can't remember the name, but definitely. Well, I mean, it was a Lucas horse, so of course it was on the Derby trail for some period of time. But
weekly.
Yeah,
almost weekly.
Like, Wayne's running a horse back. The one that was beaten by Barnes last week, he's running back at Oaklawn today. And I just wondered if Wayne might have thought to, like, trip stop at Zia or something and go the roundabout way to Arkansas and maybe run him on Tuesday or so and give him a chance to fire again. But, yeah, I would imagine this horse is named for Toby. And obviously, you know, a guy, racetrack character and a very good trainer in his own right that was very friendly with the Morleys. So I'm sure this one would be pretty meaningful for them.
There you go. Then we get to the Gopher Wand, first of the stakes, and it seems like a well enough match bunch.
Yeah, I mean, I also wonder why it's not in the pick five sequence, because, I mean, outside of the Cigar Mile, it's the most competitive stake on the card. So, I mean, you're going to have a favorite that, I mean, if you want to bet Occult at 5-2, go on with it. But, you know, there's nothing about her that should make you overly excited. She hasn't won a race in about 16 months and just seems to find another horse to chase home. Did get a grade one placing last time. So somehow for Chad Brown this year for Alpha Delta, he got a grade one out of Raging Sea, multiple grade one placings and a grade one placing out of Occult. That might be enough to get the Eclipse Award itself, because she's not much horse. She's just okay and nothing better. This might be the right spot for her. The flat mile might really end up being what she wants to do most. And it looks like she's catching a lot of these horses at the right time. And what I mean by that is she's getting Tizzy in the Sky off the layoff. Obviously, she was wide last time in the FIPS. She wanted to be inside on most of the early part of Belmont Day. So, and then she's also getting Comparative off a layoff. And, you know, the crazy thing about Comparative, she ran this really solid, really game race in the Bayakoa and just didn't run a step in her next two starts. And that was what you had to have imagined something was going wrong. Now she comes back off a layoff. You know, everybody not named Rick Dutrow at the meet that's done well, you'd start it with Brad Cox, who has 7 wins at this fall meet. Of course, I needed Alpine Princess last week, and she found a way to lose. But he's a guy that's just going to win relentlessly. And Comparative's a good horse and should find her way into a good pace stalking spot. I think Movie Moxie's a horse that is at least worthy of some consideration. She did get a pretty nice trip in the Turn Back the Alarm 2 back. I thought the inside early on that day was probably a little advantageous, and she was on the rail. Came back and gamely held off her stablemate, St. Benedict's Prep, last time. But I don't love Linda off Lasix, especially when they're not coming back off a layoff of any type, so I'd probably fade her. She's going to be a decent enough price, though. So, you know, I guess if I had to make a pick right now, it would probably be Cheetah Beauty. I'm still tempted to take Tizzy in the Sky off the layoff. I like the race she ran in the top flight. I like the inside post because I think it's going to commit Flavian to put her on the lead. And I think she's probably a better horse when she's on the lead. So, yeah, this is a super competitive race. It's one I'm definitely looking forward to.
Gopher Wand gives way to a state-bred filly and mare. First level allowance. We're going six.
Yeah, good race here and fun to see Al's Ruby back. Al's Ruby was a first-time starter that won very nicely for Christophe Clement back in April and obviously had something go wrong. Now comes back off a layoff. She runs into a pretty middling-type group. You know, nobody in here that looks all that scary. Peamutter Pickle was a really nice horse early and then came in off a layoff for Phil Antonacci in the Bowery and chased a hot pace and just totally fell apart and now comes back off a layoff with Lasix. So she's interesting to me. She should get a good stalking trip from the outside, and she really did show some ability in her first two starts. So I could see her running a lot better. That Bowery was salty, right? Tricky Temper came back and beat older horses during the regular Saratoga meet. Caldwell Loves Gold is a multiple stakes winner, and obviously Landed turned out to be a very nice horse. Later won the Fleet Indian for Wesley Ward. So that ended up being a pretty strong race, all things considered. You got a couple of horses coming in from Finger Lakes that are changing barns in a Hypnotic Flair and Embraceable Gal. Obviously, Hypnotic Flair is going to be a big price. I'm president of the Dave Duggan Fan Club. This will probably be her first opportunity on a dry racetrack also. I'm not going to be shocked if she runs a little bit better than people may anticipate, but I think the winner probably comes from that group of Al's Ruby and Embraceable Gal and Peamutter Pickle. I don't really have anybody else in there that I was all that wild about. I guess First Class Cat's worthy of some consideration, but she just doesn't win enough for me, and I don't know how she'll work out a trip from the inside.
I'll give you a horse to take a look at, a 10-1 Nolita, the Mott, getting back to sprinting. I mean, he has tried 3 different times to stretch out and did break the maiden going a mile in the slop. But, I mean, arguably on the turn back, I think is more effective and puts blinkers on. I thought Nolita, if you're looking for a price in a group that, you know, there isn't necessarily any standout.
Yeah, that's fair. I could see it. I liked her a lot last time. I thought she was wide. 2 starts back behind Bronze Sugar Babe. That was a day where you wanted to be inside. And she ran poorly last out in the thick of that really bad Bill Mott run. Now, he hasn't really turned it around. His horses ran a lot better in Kentucky as the fall met the winter. But he hasn't really turned it around that much in New York. But his horses are generally running better. I mean, it was like, what, 2 for 52 or something that Belmont at Aqueduct. So I could see her improving as well. I like the cutback. So, yeah, definitely worth a look at a price.
The state bred filly group, 2-year-olds going 6. And we've got, I think, 6 or 7 firsters. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 firsters. And 3 second timers, and then a pair that have run twice, and it's a little bit of a mysterious bunch.
It is, and far be it for me to I would never criticize David's morning line, but he must have seen some workouts on Oklahoma Smoke to make this horse 5-2 from the rail. I understand it's IRAD for Jorge Abreu, but Jorge's main man generally is Pratt, and Flavian's on Unwoke, and I like Unwoke. I think this horse is going to improve quite a bit. Jorge Abreu's horses run a lot better second time out, and this horse was off to a poor start, raced outside. He probably wanted to be towards the rail that day. Wasn't a huge inside bias, but Mischief Lady was able to wire that field along the rail. Princess Mischief came back and ran a big race, blowing by a field with a big pace setup. But she had the wide trip that day, so I think you want the wide trips out of there. Now blinkers on. I don't think she'll be 10-1. I think there's too much to like there. And, you know, these firsters, the problem this time of year with first-time starters taking an appreciable amount of money is that there are no workout reports. So, I mean, if you like the Linda Rice combo here of Army Gallant Observer, you know, they're both solid New York brand pedigrees, no doubt about it. I mean, they're not great. They're not bad. But taking an Honest Mischief firster from the rail, it just doesn't seem like the public is really going to latch on to that. I get that people will probably bet the 8 Leonora's Secret, but geez, Steve, that's as much of a turf damp side as you're going to find. Now, it's obviously a dirt top side because Bernardini's a horrible turf sire. So they paid a lot of money for this horse also, and Oak Bluff stayed in having bred the horse. But $320,000 is just total insanity for this horse. But that ownership group tends to buy at a high level. So I could see her running better. I wouldn't really want her at 9-2. I don't really want Christoph Glabana horses that he debuts on turf now just sort of running on dirt because they have to stay in New York. Tail of the Tail on the outside is interesting because it's a Vekoma, and they've obviously been so good first time out. The number right now is 17 for 67. Obviously, it's come down a little bit from the peak where he was around 30%. The Dam was winless in terms of production. She's been solid. She had a few multiple winners. Nobody that was all that great. My Italian Rabbi was probably the best one. She was a New York Bred Stake winner, won the Lady Finger. So the outside draw really feels like the best thing. And Atrus is a guy who's good with first-time starters. So I mainly focus my attention on the 3 and 10. I'd probably use a little bit of the 2.
You know, I thought, given the far-flung nature of the Maker Barn, and granted, these are New York breds, how about the sibling, the Jimmy Creed sibling of Trickery? And even, for starters, it debuted at Churchill, which is curious enough, and if you were going to do that, why wouldn't you leave a turf horse like this to run it Turfway? I mean, this is a horse you got to figure ultimately it wants grass.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, obviously the second family is it's an Augustan stable family with just heavy on turf horses. But look, I mean, the Wyckoffs are sharp, and Kirk Wyckoff bought this horse, I'm guessing privately from John Ennis. And who's a guy who, you know, not quite at John Hancock level, but obviously wants to sell horses, especially young horses. And I think it's abundantly clear that word was out that this horse was training well and went off 3-1. I mean, went off a soft favorite, don't get me wrong. It was a 9-horse field. The horse went off 3.3-1, but still went off favorite on debut. Showed some speed before fading. There might be something there, I agree. I mean, I'm glad we're going to get to see the board on this race because I think it's a grab bag in terms of where you could see action going. You're going to see people betting on turf horses or turf meant horses like the 8. The 6, Karan, is there Karan? I don't exactly know how you pronounce that. But this is a turf pedigree as much as you're going to find. Now, with that said, Strike It Rich was a turf horse, but this horse is a half to Seafoam, who won multiple New York Bred Stakes races, won the Evan Shipman, won the Alex M. Robb. So, I mean, there is dirt there, but everybody else was a competent turf horse. There was one other dirt winner named Kahar Savine, who Christoph trained. Christoph knows this family very well. So we'll see if maybe Authentic being the sire produces a little bit more dirt interest. But, it's a really, really kind of crisscrossing group, and I'm not going to be surprised really by almost anybody.
Gets us to the stake sequence, and it goes Remsen, Demoiselle, Cigar.
Yeah, I mean, look, he weighed in as a huge favorite in the Remsen, and deservedly so. You mentioned the Tip Top Thomas rookie card race from Travers Day. He weighed in, was making the widest move down the outside that day and came up just short. He came back with a good win. It got a really fast speed figure, and, you know, I think we're going to find out, obviously, as time goes by, whether that fig will hold up to scrutiny. At this point, the balance of the field, there's only been one run back, and Volt came back and ran at Churchill and got beaten a city block and dropped 55 points. So 56 points, actually. So you do worry a little bit about maybe this being kind of a one-off race. I mean, it was a 5-horse field that was the last dirt race for about an hour and a half before only one more. And that one more was General Banker, who, yeah, those horses have a lot of form, but it does have to make you a little bit concerned. The other thing is that it really wasn't that fast on Durabeff. So there's a decent chance that this horse might be a little bit overrated, and might be one that you want to take on a little bit. I know that Chad Brown liked Aviator Gee a lot in the Awad. Liked how he had trained on turf prior, was training really well apparently coming into it. This horse won a really good off the turf race two back. Second, third, and fourth place finishers all won next time out. Cyclone State improved his fig by 11 points. Hands of Time came back and won on turf, and Sounds Like a Plan came back and won on turf as well. I understand those were two turf wins, but that feels like a productive race. This horse also feels like a horse that's really going to excel at a mile and an eighth. So I might try and upset with the other Chad. And as far as Tux goes, I know you mentioned a Bourbon for Toby, who's running a little bit earlier. My understanding is they're really liking the distance with this horse. This horse apparently is one they think is going to be better going longer, and I'm not going to be surprised by that. So the fact that Bill is going right to the mile and an eighth Remsen with him, I think is pretty encouraging. I kind of see the winner coming from that group of three, but I think the value to be had here may be in beating Key Waden in the multi-race bets with either Tux or Aviator B.
Demoiselle.
Well, speaking of beating favorites, I don't know how the hell they're going to beat Mahima. I mean, she looks like a total standout in here. There just really isn't anybody that's all that embraceable as an alternative. You know, you're taking a horse like Beauty Reigns, who was sort of all out to win a maiden race. Granted, that was during that stretch where Mott wasn't going that great. It was more towards the aqueduct portion of the fall into the winter. But Mahima's just been really good in two prior starts. Feels like she should control the pace from the inside. It's just a total Florent Giroux situation. He's so much at his best when he's on horses that can be forward, and that's exactly what's going to happen. This is a really, really fun pedigree. I love seeing the PPs for Pure Clan, who was the second dam here for Bob Holthus, won the Pocahontas Golden Rod, finished second to Eight Bells in the Honey Bee in the Fantasy before running third in the Oaks, and then became a Grade 1 winner on turf and actually ended up winning multiple Grade 1s, including the Flower Bowl. So the fact that Brad liked this horse enough to debut her sprinting, and she ran the way she did, I think really it shows a lot of encouragement about how good she's going to be down the line. I'll be honest, Steve, I'll be very surprised if this horse loses.
Yeah, interesting, because yesterday when we discussed it with Jeff, and I, you know, the 4 to 5 projects what David's thoughts were. We'll talk to David in hour three. But, you know, I thought there were a couple of horses here that have run, you know, single-digit numbers. And you know, Beauty Reigns, she's the unknown quantity in here.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. I mean, you don't know how good she's going to be. That's really one of the big questions. I guess Fortuna Mia is not impossible. Yeah. What I do like about Fortuna Mia is that she ran on the outside for the most part last time. You wanted to be inside on November 2nd. Impulse Buy obviously came back and was a nice winner of a stake last week at Churchill. But do you really think Fortuna Mia benefits from extra ground? I'm very worried about these Vekomas going long. I'm not certain that they're going to get better going long. I think they were all precocious. I think they're sprinty. So I think the distance could be a big problem. And while, you know, Munnings isn't the most encouraging topside for a horse going long for the first time, obviously this Mahima dam side is just loaded with distance.
Right.
So you're really planning on her getting better with more ground. And, you know, at this stage of the game, it looks like she just might be a little bit more advanced than the rest of them in here. And that's so much of what two-year-old graded stakes races are about, is that you just have horses that are, you know, the proverbial, you know, junior in high school that's just more advanced than everybody else. And that could be the case. Now, courses could catch up to them as time goes by. I mean, hell, Brad Cox already has two of the best two-year-old fillies in the country at this point. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that if this horse takes a step forward, why isn't she in the ballpark of horses like Good Cheer and Immersive even? She's probably as good as Immersive at this point, just not as accomplished. So I hope I'm not throwing too many bouquets at her at this point, but I'm fully expecting her to be really hard to beat.
All right. That gets us to the feature, which is really entertaining.
Yeah, it really is. I don't love that Bookham Dano drew the rail. I mean, to be honest with you, Steve, I was really looking forward to betting Bookham Dano in here, and I probably still am, because I think the mile suits him so perfectly. I think he's got that really, really perfect type of style for this race, and that he can pretty much be positioned anywhere. And he was done no favors by IRAD last time. He was put into a series of tight spots. I don't want to blame him too much, but, you know, this was a situation where you're on a 3 to 5 shot. Stay out of their way. Right, and he kind of got in Bookham Dano's way by trying to ask him to do some things that he really couldn't do over a racetrack where having to make up significant ground is not the most ideal scenario. I'm not a big Mullican fan. I'm actually quite impressed with the race Mullican ran last time. I thought he was a little overrated, a little dressed up off that Fordo win against what looked to me like a subpar field. But he ran well in the sprint. I can't take anything away from him. I don't think he gets any worse at the mile. I don't know if it really moves him up, but he's definitely a contender. The horse I think that I want to bet against is Locked. I don't want to bet on Locked going second off the layoff, off Lasix this time around. I feel like this was a horse that was really ready to go off the bench. That's why he was entered in the Perryville. They took the more conservative route and going to the two other then. But he's what I think I'd want to take a little bit more of a critical approach for. Obviously, it doesn't matter really who he ran against last time. He was going to beat them like a drum with the trip that he had. But he just had that really cozy run of it, sitting off a slow pace, pulled clear web once. This is a much, much tougher field. And this is a good field, top to bottom. I think Senor Buscador is hardly without chance. I like Joel on a horse with his style.
Yep.
They just need to burn for him. They need to go really fast because he needs the pace to come back to him. And then obviously Post Time is a clear contender. Post Time has done, I don't love the saying has done nothing wrong, but I mean, this horse fires every time. And it was a good second in the dirt mile last time out. I obviously wish he had gotten there. Would have been helpful for me, but he seems to run hard every time, and he'll be rolling late. He probably won't be as far back as Senor Buscador.
I'm of a very similar mind, and those that listened to Andy on Tuesday, Andy sort of said Locked was his, you know, against, and I knew that was coming. That is totally not his kind of horse. So I'm not surprised that you feel the same way, to be honest. I think the only other stranger might be Law Professor.
Could be. Obviously an Aqueduct lover, no doubt about it. He's got a tremendous record locally with 5 wins and 7 starts and came back from the layoff with a really game win last time out. Horses like Bendug and Tabawash are obviously very solid. And, you know, the February win, though we you know, we're familiar with Law Professor, we know a lot about him, maybe points to the fact that the flat mile is his ideal trip.
Yep.
It's not going to surprise me if that ends up being the case. It's not been a great fall for Rob Attriss, but, you know, that barn can turn around its fortunes at once, and this is a horse who should get a very good trip. I think the pace will go a long way towards determining what happens here. I mean, look, you and I are both fans of Coastal Mission, and we've not mentioned him, but he seems to run, you know, run well every time as well. And obviously a one-turn mile, as I said, going into the 49er, was really his best trip. So he also, the interesting thing about him is that this horse has been decidedly against a pretty clear bias in 2 straight wins. So, you know, throw him out at your own risk. He is not a horse to take lightly. Maybe not quite at this level, but is a horse with a lot of talent and a lot of ability. So, yeah, I could see Law Professor and Coastal Mission being horses that are going to be nice prices that you might want to have on some of your backup type of multi-race bets.
Well, we went this far. What about the 10th?
Yeah, tough race. I mean, Commuted looks very dangerous to me, coming in off a good third behind Mass Mac at Emirates Road in a stronger than par one other than. I mean, when you see a one other than get a 90-plus buyer speed figure, you know it's a pretty strong group. I'd love to know what the hell happened with Reynolds Channel last time, because, I mean, he was just god-awful. And I get it. It was right at the start of that bad run for Mott at the Belmont at Aqueduct meet. And maybe it can just be chalked up to that. I'm certain that Lee has a cadre of excuses for why he ran poorly and is probably looking very forward to betting him right back. So I'm sure you can share them with me perhaps offline. All kidding aside, I mean, one of racing's all-time great men, Lee Einsiedler. So I'm always going to root for Reynolds Channel, who, you know, I mean, on his day is terrific, right? I mean, he's a horse that's perfectly capable of running the kind of race that you would need to win this. So a deserving favorite. I would say at their respective prices, I'd probably prefer Commuted just slightly because he'll be close to the pace and in line to potentially wire them if he's able to get the lead. There's really not an abundance of pace in here. You've got some horses stretching out that aren't really all that fast. So I think I'll probably end up picking Commuted, but I'll certainly have Reynolds Channel on board, and I could probably find a way to use a horse like Quick to Accuse as well, who made up good ground late last time. Granted, it was sprinting, but the mile looks like it poses no issue for him.
Outstanding. Nick Tamaro, everybody. And Nick, good luck this weekend. I appreciate it. Will you be playing the Aqueduct Caymanas Oaklawn cross country tomorrow?
I did not realize that Caymanis was in it. You mentioned, of course, our mutual friend Andy Serling, who was living it up in Jamaica at this point. So, yeah, very, very much looking forward to taking a look at the Moutet Mile, where it seems as if we have some American representation. Very exciting, and perhaps you have stimulated me now enough to take a look at the sequence and get involved. It is opening weekend at Oaklawn as well, so that's a lot of fun. I know everybody looking forward to that, and big fields and good racing. So, yeah, very exciting.
Are you doing any Oaklawn for Twin Spires?
It might be the only track during the winter I don't look at on a regular basis, but, yeah, I try to keep a little bit of an eye on it, especially we get the occasional shipper come down to Houston for it. But, yeah, I took a look at the first couple cards and, you know, probably found a way to turn a decent amount of money into a very, very small amount.
And Tam, 1215, Nick, I appreciate it. Good luck.
Anytime, my friend. Good luck to you.
Talk next week. Nick Tamaro, folks, coming up on 10 of. Going to get Callie in here. And I'm just catching up on number of people. Gosh, I very easily could do. We could easily do a full fledged Rodney Jenkins tribute show. I'll tell you that. There's just so many people from both thoroughbred and the equestrian world that are responding. Wow, Tom Skiffington. They had a long association. Wow. All right. I'll do my best to, make it. All right. Let me get Callie first and then Dave Grenning. And certainly I know in the Mid-Atlantic and, in fact, Dave Joseph. Dave Joseph, who I talked to this morning as well about Rodney, he's preparing a press release from Maryland Jockey Club and the Maryland Horseman, Alan Foreman, and I'm sure Tom Lamara will write up a piece as well. It's the Maryland Juvenile Championships tomorrow, and they can't run these races without Callie Francois.
Well, they could, but it is nice that I get to be along for the ride.
That's true. You know, one thing you find out in this game, if you can't make it to certain events, you may think they're not going to be able to run them, but somehow they do. I know.
Somehow, yes. But I will, in fact, be there tomorrow for the Maryland Juvenile Stakes.
They're good, and we'll talk about them in a second.
They are.
I got to ask you about Rodney, and I.
Yes.
You know, your arrival, did you get a chance to know him and ride for him at all?
Absolutely. So while I rode maybe one for him as an apprentice, he was always kind of waiting for me to come back and give me another chance. Should that opportunity have ever crossed. But he was always such a warm place to go to on the backside in the mornings. And not necessarily just because his office was warm, but because he had such a warm spirit to him. He was an immaculate horseman, and we are at a loss. The Maryland community is at a loss with the loss of Rodney.
Well, and you have spent time with Mrs. Charles, and other than Woodbury Payne, boyhood friends and lifelong friends, and Woodbury let me know. But the first person I thought of was Mrs. Charles and Hillwood all the success that Rodney authored for her, and the Bandbox. I mean, I remember seeing Bandbox in New York, and he was the first big tappet. And I'm looking forward actually to Aaron Yagoda, who bred him. Aaron and his partner, they went to Tappet, and I'm very curious about what attracted them, because Tappet wasn't it wasn't a known quantity yet. But Rodney, really, Bandbox's success really raised the first flag for Tappet, and you know, most recently Cordmaker, and how much fun it was to follow Cordmaker.
Yeah, and it was, it, you know, the Cordmaker was, you know, kind of that final horse that was, it, you know, the horse's career kind of describes Rodney as well, because that horse had such a long-lasting career. He could do a couple of different distances, just like Rodney, with his talents, not only as, you know, a wonderful horse trainer, but as an Olympic show jumper. So yeah, you're talking just, and we don't have horsemen like, not only do we have horsemen, you know, like Rodney, but even amongst Rodney's generation, there were no horsemen like Rodney. So, you know, the hands, you know, the reins have been, Evelyn now has the hands in his shed row, and she has, and she's phenomenal. But Rodney was, especially coming from, you know, just coming from a woman's standpoint, Rodney was always a safe space for women to go to. And wow, that's primarily what his barn, his whole barn was just a team of women. And I think that speaks to the kind of man that Rodney was.
That's really nice. One nice thing to say. And yeah, I mean, on the show jumping front, and the show ring, I mean, probably the only parallels we've got that I mean to come to mind immediately are
Michael Matz,
but John Sadler.
Yes.
Sadler,
yes,
too. And when I posted this morning, Sadler was the first person to respond. I know, you know, John's talked a couple different times over the years with me about his, you know, about his show ring experience. And you know, there's certainly countless horsemen and horsewomen that, you know, that had show ring experience before they came to the racetrack. But yeah, Michael Matz and Sadler are the two that, you know, that we've kind of we look to on this front. But the success that when people see these obituaries that are going to come forward, I'm sure the Washington Post will have one just legendary. He's in every show jumping Hall of Fame, the National Equestrian, I think it's the National Horse Show Hall of Fame, on and on and on. I mean, it's an amazing legacy. Let's talk about these Maryland juveniles.
Well, I wanted to also, as we segue into races, I did want to mention that since there will be a lot of emotion with post time being in the Cigar Mile,
yes,
under Hillwood.
Yes,
for tomorrow.
Good point.
So
good
just keep that, you know, everybody, you know, emotional, you know, bet what you're going to bet, but maybe put out an emotional bet because I feel like that will be a little bit of a dedication to Rodney, because I mean, yes, the horse has been with Brittany the entire time, but it's, you know, it's Miss Charles, and it's a great, you know, it would just be, would be really nice, but just make note of that, everybody, as we talk into racing. And yes, let's go ahead into these stakes that we have for Saturday here at Laurel. Do you want to start with the filly or the boys?
The fillies is good. The seventh, it's the seventh and the eighth, and actually, it's a good pick three and pick four. The sixth race is a 7 furlong filly and mare first level allowance, and it's a big bulky field of 11. Actually, what you doing here? Be Inspired from Brittany is the favorite. And Lovely Charm from Gonzalez, certainly Claudio Gonzalez, makes some sense. Those are the two favorites. But if you're going to play the late pick four, you got to get a winner in the sixth.
Okay, so I do go with Be Inspired. I go with Lovely Charm first, then Be Inspired after that. I go with the 10. I include the 10 in there, Diamond Sue, for Mancia, who's riding on the, I'm on the overnight. Jamie attracts the ride of Jamie Rodriguez. They got the win at this distance. You know, so last time, let's see, too long, it just kind of came up empty watching that race. And yes, that was the first time that one tried that distance, but the dam, however, was a sole router, so that's why they tried. I just like the distance cutting back here for Mancia. And then I round out to just give it to you. When I go through these picks, I have notes on how many horses here. I have notes on probably 8 different horses in this race. And I can only go 4 wide, so I go 5, 8, 10, 3, then 11.
Well, there is a horse in here that I'll mention that is just a little interesting and is going to have to improve, but has a pattern that I like. Bobby Bales offers Next Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a horse that at first glance, everybody's going to say, oh, this horse wanted turf all along. Maybe.
No.
Not necessarily. Yeah, exactly. It just could be that through the summer and into the fall, this is just a three-year-old filly that keeps getting better. This is a Country Life bred divining rod filly that there's one glaring, interesting performance in there, and it's in that restricted allowance in August. If you look at Next Girl in totality, it might just be that she's just a better horse and is getting better with age. And returning to the dirt, she just takes another step forward. And I would not judge her on those early career performances on the main track. I think she's just a better horse now, 6-1. So I mean, it's going to have to take one more step forward, but that horse intrigued me.
Sold, because Robbie Bales is 5-19 from the turf to the dirt, and he gave out a wonderful $40 winner last weekend.
Nice. Well, we love Robbie Bales. Love ourselves some Scrappy Tea.
Yeah.
The man who brought you Scrappy. Don't ask Jeremy Rose and a Fleet Alex about him, though. Let's talk about the fillies, and it starts right on the rail. Phil Capuano with this Ms. Notion, the Great Notion, Bowman bred, Mapo Racing owned, first out winner.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I don't have her in my top four selections, and I can't believe I don't. So, of course, she's a half to talk to the judge who won the Miss Disco here last year for the distance. And she, of course, she's first out against winners, however, not the first time she's lost against them. But it was also, there's just so much family behind this one to suggest that this distance will be no problem. I could just rattle off the details. I love the, of course, Great Notion, 19%. It's just a matter of the fact is this one had an easy trip. I will say that this one had an easy trip last time out. We're dealing with a completely different set of fillies and a completely different post position. So it really depends how this one is going to be able to. This one will be getting legitimate, you know, potentially real dirt in its face for the first time here today. So that's the only thing I have against this one, is the post position.
Well, then who do you like?
Who I do like is the horse right next to it, Onyx 10 for Gary Capuano with Tori Alba. The Grand Am won routing in first and second asking. This one is a half sibling to Secret Zipper, who was on the front winning in the last run, which was two turns. But looking at that race, especially in the Maryland Million Lassie, too, you know, had the rail and it was fine that day, just kind of gets a bit of a similar setup. And last time out, kind of waiting for an opening, to be honest, and it ended up getting it a little bit later and carried on well. So just to me, it was a triple timing thing that this one did not get the opportunity. The gallop out to me was pretty good. It wasn't the whole field, you know, galloping out wasn't outstanding, but amongst the top three, the gallop out was pretty good. I just see a better trip going for this one. I go 2-4-6-7 with the one just waiting there for a scratch.
Huh. All right. No interest in Malibu Hooch?
I do. So, and it's hard. I mean, I have,
it's a good group.
This is a very tough field. And so, you know, in that last time out, she basically, the hind end grazed another horse, but kind of kept going in, you know, kind of drifting in that first race and was relaxing, was quickly reengaged, passed at the three ace, she was just out galloped by Onyx 10. Honestly, I was looking in that whole field and I was looking for that particular gallop out. And for me, the Onyx Storm gallop out was a bit better with a tougher trip than it was with Malibu Hooch. I mean, it makes complete sense that, you know, she's at the odds that she is and she might go off favorite. And I completely get that. I'm wondering if that race might have took something a little bit out of her. And I mean, of course, this is a half to Malibu Moonshine,
yeah,
who also just loves Laurel and won the Maryland Juvenile Fillies like this, you know. So it's setting up in so many positive ways. I just keep, and again, I think I may have done a little bit analysis paralysis. So it's not, I don't dislike any of these fillies in this race. This race, to me, to put a, you know, to put my order in, it was extremely difficult. So I would, again, I was just nitpicking some of these races, and I'm like, who got the better end of the deal? Who didn't? Who had to deal with some stuff? Who's going to probably visually, who's going to look like that they may perhaps bounce out next time out? So, and that's always hard to gauge, but, yeah, I'm trying to beat the favorite and, you know, go with Onyx 10 and G-Cap.
Well, and you mentioned Malibu Moonshine, who won this race herself, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn to the boys, and
it's not any easier, Steve.
We've got It's Hammer Time on the outside. Who, I mean, gosh, took one misstep coming to New York in the Nashua, and then suddenly is 5-1 because of that. And there are some horses that have got, you know, some figure strength, including Tony Eclipse, who finished ahead of Hammer Time in that Nashua. Then you've got Executive Order from Phil Serpy coming down for Wellspring with the Unified Gelding, Executive Order, 5-2, second choice. Those are the two that kind of start the conversation. And then Capuano Gary with the Lewis winner running back, Sacred Thunder on the rail.
And that's who I end up going with. Again, super tough. And this one's proven to be able to handle longer distances way back when. So I don't think this is going to be an issue here at all. The Maryland Million Nursery is officially being dubbed a key race for me with what's been coming out of these fields. This one, you know, I have a ton of notes just diving into that race, but, you know, worked with the stablemate and that also is in this race. To me, it's interesting because Gary usually does a 5-furlong workout. He did a 3/4-mile workout on the 27th, so that caught my attention. I loved how this horse was giving the opportunity to around the turn to kind of take a little bit of a breath before this one got to work in that effort last time out, getting to the quarter pole, just kind of realized he was on his outside lead early before being bumped on and stayed on against the challenger. So I just think this horse is a bit gutsy and coming in with a really strong, mentality coming into this race. And I really like the fact that he's on the inside. I think he's going to be able to handle it no problem. I go 1-6-4-9-3 that's the direction I go in this race.
I get it. I can see it too. That race actually in the Lewis, from a fig standpoint, talking about Sacred Thunder, that's the best fig in here other than the Rocky Run at Delaware that It's Hammer Time ran, and it's pretty clear that Hammer Time may have essentially reacted to that performance at Delaware. If he gets back to the good races, 5-1's a value on It's Hammer Time. And then Tony Eclipse keeps running, you know, nice races.
Let's talk about him. Going into, let's see, I had a this one had a very comfortable lead, but stayed on the left lead on the rail. Was super even paced. I did not end up checking what the rail bias was that day. But I will. It was staying on the left lead that kind of put me a little bit. I need to see this horse, you know, doing all of the right things next time out.
Well, at 2-1, today might not be the day for that. So. All right, Sacred Thunder, Sacred Thunder for you. It's Hammer Time for me. 9-2 and 5-1. It's a nice card tomorrow at Laurel. And how was Thanksgiving before we go?
Thanksgiving was very fun. I went with a. I don't know if I should say this. I went up to a friend's afterward, and I was. How much time do you have? Because I have a story that probably won't get me invited to any of the listeners' Thanksgiving.
then you have to tell it now.
And it's a friend of mine. He lives up in Hunt Valley, and it was just a smorgasbord of friends and family. There's about 10 of us, but I brought in, not only I, of course, brought in the pies,
yeah.
But then previous, and it always happens every year, there's a mushroom farm that uses their substance from Laurel Park, putting it delicately,
yeah.
And to grow the mushrooms. So these are Laurel Park mushrooms. So I brought up the Laurel Park mushrooms, and I didn't make them. I made them in the kitchen. And so I got there immediately after the races. Nobody was there yet. I started to get into it. I was looking for different herbs, and my friend Tim Rickey is he's a landscape designer, so he said let me just go and grab some rosemary that's outside, and I was in the middle of doing something. He ended up doing it. He said it's on the counter right there. And so I turn around, and it doesn't look like rosemary. And I'm like, you know what, maybe I don't know me. I'm dealing with Tim Rickey's, this could be some form of some strain of rosemary that I don't know that it's, you know, I could be uneducated right now. So I started grabbing those, and I started throwing them in. Mushrooms are looking great. People started coming in, and all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but somebody asked me, she's like, what are you putting in there? I said, oh, rosemary. And all of a sudden, Timber comes by, and he said, that's not rosemary. That's not rosemary at all. Ended up being, heavenly bamboo, which is toxic to humans. So there goes
all your mushrooms.
Yeah. So I need to recover. I need to make up and recover for next year. But yes, I potentially almost poisoned everybody on Thanksgiving.
Why was it even in the house? Why did he even bring it in?
Because he used it as a decoration on the kitchen windowsill.
Oh, Jesus.
It was a decorative thing.
Unbelievable. that is pretty good. Well,
yeah,
but we don't count. We know not to count on you.
You had to be there. Listen, I can be really on it sometimes. But I used to dye my hair blonde for a reason. And as a child, one of my nicknames was Urkel. So this is a very, very Cali thing to do. The look on my face was pretty priceless. So
pretty
there
good.
You have it.
There you go, folks. That's pretty good. Thank you for that.
20 to 1. Let's see. We're going to make up some odds for me Thanksgiving next year.
You're still a desirable Thanksgiving guest.
Well, I need to contribute properly.
Exactly.
I need to make up for next year.
Stick to the pies. Callie Francois, everybody. Thanks, Callie. Too funny. We're going to take a quick break here, actually. Then Dave Grenning and Scully in hour two. What else? I've got, what else we got? Who am I missing? Oh, Barry. We're going to hear from Barry Spears. We'll do the stakes at Tampa. And maybe another couple of, it's a good sequence at Tampa tomorrow, too. Then Hammer and David Aragona. All right? Second half on the way at the races. Stay with us.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo STEVE200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapita training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
PA Pred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in breeders' awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA Bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just three states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at PABred.com.
The Remington Park Thoroughbred season is in the stretch run, heading to the final night of live racing on December 13th featuring the Springboard Mile. Racing starts at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Then on Friday, December 13th, the Springboard Mile will wrap up the season as two-year-olds compete for qualifying points to next year's Kentucky Derby. The first race is at 5 p.m. on Springboard Mile night, Friday, December 13th. The Remington Park Casino always features jackpot play. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Let your heart race at Remington Park.
Sirius XM Sports.